Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, July 27th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Positivity Rate is Highest Since January. Midland Health reported Monday a positivity rate of 17.5% last week. By Stuart Doreen. The COVID-19 positivity rate at Midland Health testing centers is the highest since January. Midland Health reported Monday a positivity rate of 17.5% last week. It was the second straight week the positivity rate was over 10% and the highest rate since the same percentage was reported during the week of January 23rd. The district reported 481 total tests and 84 positive tests through Midland Health centers. That doesn't include all reported to the Midland Health Department. The 84 positives were the most since 86 were reported during the week of February 13th. Other notables included the first time the 7-day COVID occupancy percentage at Midland Memorial topped 12% since March. Midland Health also reported the number of COVID-19 patients reached 28, 23 active and 5 convalescing, and 7 on ventilators. All are higher totals than reported last week. The Midland Health Department had not reported its numbers from the weekend. The number of COVID cases impacted Midland County residents reached 137 through Thursday. That was 26 more than during the previous week and the most since late February, even before the addition of cases on Friday and Saturday. Lastly, Midland Health reported that even with more concerns about another COVID-19 spike taking place, the number of vaccines reached only 179. The most were 92 provided at Legacy High School. Midland Health officials are expected to provide an update on the current COVID-19 spike later this week. This article is entitled, Trost Says He's Lived Up to Promises. Michael Trost is seeking another term on the City Council. By Stuart Doreen. Michael Trost is seeking another term on the Midland City Council. The at-large councilman will be part of the crowded race for 2 spots on Election Day, November 2nd. Midlanders will elect 2 representatives from the expected pool of candidates to serve at-large or citywide. Also on the ballot are seats in District 1, generally North Midland, and District 2, generally East and South Midland. Trost earned the second at-large spot in 2018, collecting 30% of the vote to finish behind Spencer Robnett. But in Midland, the top 2 vote-getters claim spots on the 7-person council. Trost, in a statement to the Reporter Telegram, quoted former President George W. Bush about why he deserves another term this time around. A promise made is a promise kept, Trost wrote to the Reporter Telegram. When you elected me in 2018, I told you I would use my conservative leadership and experience to be fiscally responsible, find non-property tax sources of revenue, support our first responders, and protect and enhance our neighborhoods. I believe I've done just that. That's why I'm running for re-election. Trost listed the following as accomplishments during his first term as an at-large representative. The City Council's adoption of his proposal that identified non-property tax sources of revenue that enhanced the quality of life in our community. His fierce advocacy of the spaceport, whose businesses are now valued at over $2 billion. The assets we invested in at spaceport are now paying dividends we couldn't have imagined. This keeps property taxes low. His support for healthcare professionals, even when it seemed some public sentiment began to turn against them, a reference to his support of a mask mandate earlier during the COVID-19 pandemic. votes against property tax increases when evidence of an overwhelming public benefit could not be justified. Fights to protect city neighborhoods, even when the odds were against us. Governing is hard, Trost wrote, but if you elect me to a second term as your at-large city council member, you can rest assured that I will use my conservative leadership and experience to focus on those issues that will enhance revenues and minimize the property tax burden on homeowners. Trost has served three total terms on the Midland City Council. The first two were as the representative of District 4, ending in 2013. Those who have filed or announced their respective candidacies for the at-large election are Spencer Robnett, Robin Poole, Dustin Johnson, Ross Schumann, Dan Corrales, and Trost. The Midland City Secretary's Office reports that the filing period will take place through August 16th. Through Monday, the only people to announce or file for Districts 1 and 2 respectively are current members of the Midland City Council, Scott Dufford in District 1 and John Norman in District 2. To see the map of City Council districts, go to midlandtexas.gov/238/mayor-city-council. This article is called Small Bites. Seance offers unique pop-up fine dining experience to area. By J.C. Lewis. Seance started after three colleagues found that Midland lacked a true fine dining experience with multiple courses and unique presentations. Co-owners Chef Rakim Samuel, Chef Maxwell Mourner, and Michaela Calipio wanted to bring their fine dining opportunity they have all experienced outside of Midland to the people of Midland. The fine dining pop-up held its first dinner on July 19th at Shack in the Back. The fine dining pop-up combines the best of the West with the best of the world, they said. We have wanted to do something for Midland for quite a while, Warner said. We have seen that there's a market for this. Since we have the skill and experience, we figured let's provide a fine dining experience. We are excited to give Midland something else besides what they are used to. Chef and co-owner Rakim Samuel was born and raised on St. Croix, Virgin Islands. Growing up, he spent most of his time with his mom in her garden and with his grandfather on his farm. He began growing his own vegetation, which was harvested right before mealtime. Samuel attended culinary food at Odessa College. Samuel said he was most excited about using ingredients and presenting them in a different form for the dinner. Chef and co-owner Maxwell Warner was born in Los Angeles and grew up in the beach communities of Santa Monica and San Diego. Warner attended Escoffier School of Culinary Arts in Boulder, Colorado. He has worked at the Broadmoor Hotel. While focusing on traditional French techniques, Warner moved overseas to El Guono, Egypt, to accept a chef position helping run a small, unique restaurant called Laguni. He later returned to California to accept a job at Rancho Valencia. He worked in their premier restaurant, Veladora. Warner was excited about the quality of products they were able to acquire for the first dinner. The Iberia Secreto was imported straight from Spain, and it's one of the best cuts of pork because the pigs are raised on acorns and living off the land, he said. Service manager and co-owner Michaela Calipio is from Kailua Kona, Hawaii. She has worked in the nightclub industry, holding various positions from bartending to dancing, and was also employed on the Hawaiian Inter-Island cruise ship as a cocktail server. She was hired at the Four Seasons Resort, Hualalai, and spent 8 years at that property. She then started working at Kenichi Pacific, where she gained an understanding of fine sushi and Asian fusion cuisine. She was a server and also an assistant at Kenichi. In 2015, she moved her family to Midland, where she works as a server for a private club and a yoga instructor. Galipio added that they served three wines from local winery Los Nopales. She was also excited about the Hawaiian prawn and lobster, as well as the Kona coffee from Hawaii. The trio started a planned seance around Christmas time when they all went to dinner, and Kalipia suggested creating a pop-up restaurant, Samuel said. The colleagues have bounced ideas off each other, taught each other, and challenged each other in the kitchen for years, Warner added. We thought it would be fun to be able to craft our own menu, not answer to any higher-ups, and be creative with what we wanted to do, Warner said. They originally planned to have a pop-up dinner once a month, but reevaluating how often is really feasible for the pop-ups. Warner said their goal is not to compromise their standards or products they use, therefore dinners may take more time to plan. They are looking to have the next dinner in about 2 to 2.5 months. They have decided to have the first dinner at Shack in the Back because of the nice water features at the venue. Dinner locations may change depending on availability. The dinners will have up to 30 tickets available each time. The first dinner featured the following menu: Amuse Bouche, Pike Place Razor Clam, Finger Lime, Sweet Onion, Guava, Chili paired with champagne, eaten in one bite. First course, sweet potato puree, New Caledonia blue prawn, apple, scallion, parsley oil paired with and mint spritzer. Second course, rabbit confit, agnolotti, broad beans, summer vegetables, onion soubise, paired with a sparkling yuzu infused Sancerre. Third course, Maine lobster, pastry, pea cream, radish, carrot, leek and laurel emulsion, paired with Los Nopales Soleado Intermezzo, strawberry powdered lime snow, Prosecco Espuma. Fourth course, Fermin Iberio Secreto, Jerusalem artichoke, morel mushroom, Perigold sauce, Spanish salsita paired with Los Nopales Indian summer. Needs to be served chilled to not have it be hot. Tempramado wine. Fifth course, sous vide beef tongue, Tancho raised lion's mane mushrooms, Thai basil, pomegranate, leek ash, edible flowers paired with Los Nopales La Tierra. Dessert, Valerona raspberry inspiration, passion fruit, white chocolate, cacao sponge cake, caramel, edible gold paired with Kona iced cafe latte. Closing, Casanova's Blanco, Buzz Button, Lime, and Calamansi. Warner said that the menu will be different every time. The drink pairings, the mood of the night, and desserts will be different during the next one, Kalipio added. More food news. Get a free chicken finger at Raising Cane's Tuesday during National Chicken Finger Day. When customers order an adult combo meal via the Cane's mobile app on Tuesday, they can get a free chicken finger. Huddle House is hosting its grand opening 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Friday at 4350B Northeast Loop 338 in Odessa. The opening will feature 50-cent golden waffles, a prize wheel with Huddle House signature door prizes, and a raffle with 3 grand prize winners to win free meals for a year. This Saturday, VFW Post 4149 will be hosting a donut run, 5K. Registration is $25, and half of the proceeds will be donated to the VFW National Home for Children. The VFW National Home for Children's mission is to provide children, youths, and families of veterans, active duty military, and members of the VFW and its auxiliary opportunities for growth and development in the community. The other half of the proceeds will be for the VFW Post 4149. Opal's Table announced wine dinners. Wine and Words, 7 to 10 p.m. August 2nd at Opal's Table, fundraiser for Midland Bookies. Menu will feature a Cuban dinner with Cuban cocktails, wine pairings, and cigar rolling. $65 for bookies or $100 for non-bookies. Venge Winery Dinner, 7 to 10 p.m. September 16th at Opal's Table. Celebrate back to school with a four-course dinner featuring Venge Winery. Menu features burrata cheese, pesto, grilled bread and herbs, salmon, jalapeno, asparagus, and rice. Rigatoni with lamb ragu and blackberry opera cake. Tickets are $120 plus tax. Elizabeth Spencer Wine Dinner, 7 to 10 p.m. October 21st at Opal's Table. Tickets are $120 plus tax. Asian-inspired cuisine, 7 to 10 p.m. November 18th at Opal's Table. Menu features market sashimi sweet potato, furikake, chili aioli, tuna nachos, steamed pork, dumplings, crispy Brussels sprouts with chilies, grilled beef tenderloin, and almond tart with five-spice caramel. Tickets are $100. Camus Wine Dinner, 7 to 10 p.m. December 23rd at Opal's Table. Begin Christmas festivities with the Camus Wine Dinner. For tickets to Opal's Table Wine Dinners, visit opalstable.com/events. This article is entitled Phelan Signs Civil Arrest Warrant for House Dem by Cassandra Pollock, Texas Tribune. Texas House Speaker Dade Phelan, Republican Beaumont, signed a civil warrant for the arrest of State Representative Philip Cortez, a San Antonio Democrat who rejoined his colleagues in Washington, D.C. on Sunday to help prevent the passage of a GOP-backed election bill. The warrant is not likely to have impact since Texas law enforcement lacks jurisdiction outside the state. It is the first one signed by the speaker since more than 50 House Democrats left the state to block Republicans from having the quorum needed to pass legislation during the special legislative session that began earlier this month. Last week, Cortez returned to Austin from Washington in what he said was an attempt to engage in good faith dialogue about House Bill 3, the election legislation. Other Democrats criticized Cortez's move, saying the lawmaker did not first consult with them before returning to Austin. By Sunday, though, Cortez was back in Washington, saying in a statement that talks with lawmakers in Austin on negotiating the legislation have not produced progress. In a statement Monday, Phelan said that Cortez has irrevocably broken my trust and the trust of this chamber. After the lawmaker represented to me and his fellow members that he wanted to work on policy and find solutions to bring his colleagues back to Texas. As a condition of being granted permission to temporarily leave the House floor, Representative Cortez promised his House colleagues that he would return, the speaker said. Instead, he fled the state. Cortez, who chairs the House Urban Affairs Committee, did not directly address the warrant in a statement Monday that he said owes a duty to my constituents to do everything I can to stop this harmful legislation. I will continue fighting for my constituents to ensure fair and full access to the ballot box, he said. All Texans deserve nothing less. Later Monday, during a virtual meeting with reporters, State Representative Jim Murphy, a Houston Republican who chairs the House GOP caucus, did not express any frustration with Cortez returning to Washington and said he hoped the lawmaker would return to Austin again. Other Republicans applauded Phelan for signing the warrant, including State Representative Jeff Leach of Plano, who had questioned the night before why Cortez wasn't arrested before leaving the state. After Democrats left the state, the House voted overwhelmingly to issue what's known as a call of the House in an effort to regain quorum. Part of that effort including sending law enforcement after those Democrats, though Republicans acknowledged that state authorities couldn't force lawmakers back to Texas Capitol so long as they remained out of state. The current special session is slated to end August 6th, and Democrats have said they do not plan to return to the state before then. Governor Greg Abbott has said he plans to call additional special sessions to get his priority legislation passed. This article is entitled, Oil Slips with Spread of Delta Variant Still Crimping Outlook, by Jill R. Shaw, Bloomberg. Oil dipped as investors eyed the spreading Delta variant's impact on demand while cases surge. Futures in New York fell 0.2% on Monday after rallying the previous four sessions. Global cases of COVID-19 have increased the most in 2 months, with infections surging in the U.S., Brazil, India, Indonesia, and the U.K. Countries with lower vaccination coverage in parts of Asia are seeing more fatalities and renewed restrictions, posing a threat to fuel consumption and demand for oil. On Monday, the U.S. raised a COVID-19 travel warning for Spain to the highest level. We've seen demand, excluding jet fuel, come back in the developed world in a really strong way, said Peter McNally, global head of industrials, materials, and energy at Third Bridge. So that's a known. The impact on the developing world's been more unknown. The resurgence of coronavirus cases has created volatility in the oil market and interrupted a steady price rally this year. Money managers cut their net long positions in the U.S. crude benchmark by the most since 2017 last week, as the Delta variant shook broader markets. There is seemingly a battle within the energy complex between the prevailing supply deficit engineered by OPEC Plus and the threat of the COVID-19 Delta variant in regions with low vaccination rates, said Kevin Solomon, an analyst at brokerage Stone X Group. Investors are also awaiting earnings reports from major oil companies such as ExxonMobil this week. Last week, U.S. shale producers suggested slowing production growth in the latter half of the year and continued discipline. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of action on capital discipline. There's no doubt on that, said McNally. But it's hard to pinpoint the exact week, day that we do see this turn in supply. And it's something we're certainly going to watch a bit more closely. This is the opinion page. This column is entitled, Idea Travis's Growth is Needed Win for Education, by Stuart Doreen, editor. Congratulations to the students and teachers at Travis Elementary. You made your improvement happen, and there are a lot of Midlanders who couldn't be prouder. We talked with Bethany Solis, Executive Director of IDEA Public Schools of the Permian Basin, and she said that using the rating system of 2019, the last time grades were given to campuses, that IDEA Travis would have been given the grade of a B. That is rare territory for MISD schools. Only four campuses in the district received an A or B in 2019, and it is a huge accomplishment for the elementary school in Southeast Midland. Travis was not only a failing school, but had one of the longest failing streaks in the state. But the past appears to be the past. While there is room to grow with absolute results, the growth has been good enough to put an elite rating, well, elite for Midland, on the campus. Still, this is the type of education news that many of us want to see. The number one priority for the school district should be academic performance, and when we see dramatic improvement, our community should celebrate it. We should also ask how it happened, and if there is anything that can be replicated across the district. Sadly, there are going to be some who don't want to celebrate this academic good news. They are going to make unfounded accusations about IDEA Travis cherry-picking its student population. They are going to be critical of Midland ISD's partnership with a charter program, IDEA Public Schools. They are going to come up with reasons to dislike the IDEA Travis news they read and the improvement being experienced. There might even be elected representatives who acknowledge the improvement, but attempt to temper excitement, saying that these types of partnerships are not in the best interest of the school district. Here's what I would tell any of these people. Midland needs achievement, not institutional protectionism. Midland needs an education system that can go from an F to a B during a year when the pandemic rocked our education world. IDEA Travis didn't make excuses, just gains in the classroom. And if it was so easy, it would have been done before. We wouldn't have forced that campus to be among the worst in the state. Midlanders should be excited about this new chapter in education. Midlanders should be pleased that the school board opted for a solution that didn't require the closing of a campus, but allowed what is still basically a neighborhood school to serve its own students. They should also see this as a win for the education of Hispanics in Midland. 83% of Travis students met or exceeded their individual growth goal on the STAR exam. 62% of all English learners met their English proficiency growing goal. An average of 1.5 years was made up during the year dominated by COVID. That students in grades 3 to 5 averaged improvement in their reading by a grade and a half. That 93% of Travis students met or exceeded their growth target in math. In pre-K through second grade, only about 5% were reading on grade level at the beginning of the year. By the end of the 2020-21 campaign, 70% were on level with where they should be in that curriculum. It is exciting, and I am proud of their growth, but they will be the top students in Midland. Period. Idea Travis Executive Principal Haley McCarthy said, they will outperform everyone else. It will take a little time. Solis added, I mean, these are the things that people think are impossible, right? That a school that failed for so many years, oh, it's not possible for those kids to progress that far in 1 year. No, it is, because it was never the kids' fault to begin with. We knew that. We knew before that Idea Public Schools was a proven commodity. Now Midland has experienced how good Idea can be here, in one of the worst performing districts in the state. Our community should look forward to any expansion of Idea in our community, either on its own or as a partner of the district. We should also encourage that if a school district makes a call for quality to improve another MISD school, that Idea gets earnest consideration. The business and philanthropic community in Midland believes in Idea. Now we know why. It's time the rest of us say, let's see more of what is happening at an improving school like Travis. It is better for education in Midland. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, July 27th. Dwight Franklin Fleming. Dwight Franklin Fleming, 100, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Saturday, July 24th, surrounded by his family. The family will receive friends on Wednesday, July 28th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Thursday, July 29th at 2 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Chapel, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Dwight was born on December 25th, 1920, in Frazeesburg, Ohio, to Thomas and Rhonda Fleming. Dwight was preceded in death by his parents, Tom and Rhoda Fleming, his son, Terry Fleming, his brothers, Charles Fleming, Bill Fleming, Carl Fleming, Tom C. Jr. Fleming, Asa Fleming, and Walter Fleming. Sisters, Nora Fleming, Rhoda Reed, Clara Morin. He is survived by his wife, Betty, his daughter, Jean Britt, 4 grandchildren, and 9 great-grandchildren. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Tate Austin Crawford. Tate Austin Crawford, 11 years old, fell into the arms of Jesus on Thursday, July 22nd in Big Spring, Texas. The family will receive friends on Monday, July 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A celebration of Tate's life will be held on Tuesday, July 27th at 4 p.m. at First Baptist Church in Big Spring. Tate was born on October 10th, 2009 in Lubbock, Texas. He is survived by his loving parents, Ashley and Rusty Crawford of Big Spring, twin brother Owen Crawford of Big Spring, brother Mason Crawford, grandparents Mary and Michael Thornhill of Brownwood, Clay and Sherry Kuykendall of Brownwood, Jerry and Sonia Crawford of Cahoma, great-grandfather Charlie Garrett of Midland and Carl Crawford of Midland, many aunts and uncles and cousins. He is preceded in death by Sarah Crawford, great-grandmother, Bolton Garrett of Midland, Maggie Garrett of Midland, Jeanine Garrett of Midland, Louise Bible of Brownwood, and Don and Jean Kuykendall of Brownwood. In lieu of flowers, please consider toys or monetary donations made in Tate's name to CASA or an animal shelter. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory in Big Spring. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Death notices. Gavin Schubert. Gavin Schubert, 14, of Midland, passed away July 20th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, July 30th at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Celebration of Life will be held at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, July 31st at Stonegate Fellowship, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Peter Charles Hansen. Peter Charles Hansen, 59, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, July 25, 2021. There are no services held at this time. He is survived by his wife, Pam Hansen, of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Rochelle Adams. Rochelle Adams, 55, of DeSoto, Texas, passed away July 22nd. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, July 30th at Visionary Hollowell Community United Methodist Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com.
Hello. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, July 27th, 2021. Council Faces Difficult Choices by Federico Martinez. FMARTINEZ at OAOA.com. Odessa's current city council on today will have its leadership tested as never before, as it faces a city gripped in confusion and political chaos. The Odessa City Council will decide whether to allow local sports associations permission to remove structures and other improvements from the UTPB Athletic Complex, a move University of Texas System lawyers say is not allowed under a lease agreement that expires soon between the university and the city. That issue became more complicated because some associations this past weekend apparently ignored legal warnings from UTPB and the city and started removing equipment and other improvements from campus facilities. City Attorney Natasha Brooks notified the association on Friday to halt any efforts to remove equipment until council meets on Tuesday, the city's director of communications, Devin Sanchez, said on Monday. The council was already scheduled to vote today on whether to have the city remove equipment that the city and sports association paid for or installed, or hire a third party to handle the removal. City Manager Michael Marrero on Monday did not respond to requests to speak about the issue. the already strained relationship between the city, Sports Association, and UTPB became even more acrimonious after the three entities failed to reach a new agreement that would allow the association's sports team to continue using the university's athletic facilities. All three sides have blamed each other for the failed negotiations. The current agreement between UTPB and the city expires August 31st. Marrero last week said the city has offered to let the association use city park facilities. Several city council members last week blamed the fallout on association leaders and UTPB's inability to come to terms on a new agreement. Councilman Steve Thompson said council was willing to support a new agreement with UTPB. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Children rush to the Junior League Jurassic Spray Ground as the water is turned on during the grand opening Saturday, May 28, 2018 at UTPB Park. The spray ground has a dinosaur theme featuring water slides, dumping buckets, ground geysers, and jets, while shaded pavilions flank the spray ground. The $2.5 million project was a joint venture between the City of Odessa and the Junior League of Odessa. The contract between the City of Odessa and UTPB, which allows club sports to use UTPB Park, will expire at the end of August. The Splash Park will remain unaffected by the current leasing issues between the city and UTPB. Association leaders have cried foul over UTPB's proposed new contract terms, which included the university overseeing field scheduling, subjecting the association's sports teams to an annual audit, and requiring the association to share profits with the university. Some association leaders have accused the university of trying to take over the sports leagues. The council on Tuesday is also scheduled to vote on whether to use certificates of obligation to pay for a $95 million rehabilitation of the current water plant. But that vote may be scrapped if the Ector County Republican Party turns in petitions prior to the start of the meeting that would instead call for residents to vote on a bond issue to pay for the plant rehabilitation. COs only require a vote by council to proceed. City Secretary Norma Grimaldo, who oversees city elections, said the GOP has until the start of council's meeting to submit a minimum of 2,798 voter signatures, or 5% of the total number of current registered voters, which are 55,950. As of Monday afternoon, the Republican group had not submitted the petitions, city officials confirmed. Assistant City Manager of Administrative Services Cindy Muncie has told council that if they approve the COs next Tuesday, the city would receive the funds by October 12th, and work on the water plant could likely begin by the end of the year. If the GOP submits the required number of signatures in time, things become a little more complicated, Muncie said. Council on Tuesday would then have to decide whether to vote to accept the petition or reject the petition if they can determine it does not contain the required number of valid signatures. Council could also decide to postpone action until their August 10th council meeting. The signatures would also have to be verified and approved by the Ector County Elections Office before an election could be scheduled, Muncie explained. The problem, Muncie said, is that the County Elections Office will be closed during the first 2 weeks of August because election staff will be attending an out-of-town training session. County election officials have said they could have staff review and verify the petition signatures prior to their departure, but would have to charge the city for employee overtime to do the work, Muncy said. The cost to the city would depend on how many election staff members are needed and how many hours they work. Charity Tournament. Photos by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Above, Lauren Gordon hits her ball from the fairway on the 18th hole using an iron as Matthew Alexander, Marcus Nichols, and Frankie Krumery look on during a charity golf tournament hosted by XTO Energy Incorporated, benefiting First Tee West Texas and Boy Scouts of America Buffalo Trail Council in memory of Jack Moore Monday at the Odessa Country Club. Moore was an Eagle Scout and came from a long family tradition of scouting. The proceeds donated to the Boy Scouts of America in Moore's honor will help to further the Scouts' mission of preparing young people to make ethical and moral choices over their lifetimes. First Tee West Texas helps students who might not otherwise have the opportunity get introduced to the game of golf, which is used as a mechanism to reinforce the values of integrity, respect, and perseverance. Middle, Eric Hammack, right, shakes hands with First Tee West Texas, Luis Valderrama, 11, after the 18th hole. Bottom right, Matthew Alexander hits his ball out of a bunker as Frankie Krumery looks on. Below, First Tee West Texas, Matthew Madrid, 11, rakes a bunker. Hiring Attendance Improvement Program on Agenda. OA News at OAOA.com. In a packed agenda, the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will consider approving the hiring of an Executive Director of Leadership and Principals for Burleson, Cavazos, and G.E. Buddy West Elementary Schools. The meeting is scheduled for 6 p.m. today in the first floor boardroom of the Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. The board also will consider approval to purchase a software platform to improve attendance rates. Supplemental agenda material said the district would partner with an organization to provide a high-quality, high-impact education program that targets dropout prevention and dropout recovery of students who are under 21 years of age and have not graduated from high school. ECISD will recover a percentage of lost average daily attendance generated through the dropout recovery efforts through revenue sharing. The district plans to partner with Kinvolved Incorporated, KINVO software system. The Kinvo Attendance Improvement Software is a comprehensive program designed to improve student attendance. The premium renewal cost is $238,341. The interlocal agreement between Ector County ISD and the University of Texas at Austin is to implement on-ramps by offering distance college courses through a dual enrollment model. UT at Austin will provide training for high school teachers who work alongside the UT professors for implementation of select courses. This opportunity allows high school students to earn their high school credit from ECISD and college credits from UT Austin through a distance education course. Another item is a data sharing between the district and UT Austin. It allows ECISD to provide individual student-level data to UT Austin for the purpose of implementing, billing, and evaluating the OnRamp's dual enrollment program. Likewise, UT Austin, in accordance with FERPA, FERPA, will agree to provide individual student-level data to ECISD for the purpose of evaluation, accountability, and student record-keeping, the material says. This agreement will be in effect from June 1, 2021 through August 31, 2022. A state assessment update also is on the agenda. 540 days. For 540 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 18,064 total cases, 379 deaths. Midland County, 19,758 total cases, 275 deaths. Texas, 3,077,513 total cases, 53,018 deaths. U.S. cases, 34,413,532 total confirmed, and 608,528 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Quick hits. Family Fun Night. Stonegate Fellowship, 4240 Preston Smith Road, has scheduled a family fun night at 6 p.m. Wednesday. There will be jumpers, games, and a magician show. The event is free and open to the public. Food trucks will be available to purchase dinner. Visit tinyurl.com/C4P5K9W8. Back to school donation drive. First Basin Credit Union, 7100 East Highway 191, has officially kicked off the 6th annual Back to School Donation Drive, benefiting children of the Rainbow Room of the Permian Basin. First Basin is requesting monetary donations be made at any FBCU location in Odessa, Midland, or Andrews. Account number 80001-01. Donations will be accepted through Wednesday. The drive was kicked off with a $500 donation from First Basin. All donations collected will be presented to the Rainbow Room to purchase what the students will need. The Rainbow Room works with Child Protective Services and helps foster children and all other children involved in CPS care throughout Odessa, Midland, Andrews, and surrounding counties. From staff reports. Closing prices. Posted, $68.39. Futures, $71.91. Natural gas, $4.102. Benchmark U.S. fell 16 cents to $71.91 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Local news roundup. Free back-to-school haircuts. Coiffure's Barbershop and Salon and Lavish Barbershop have scheduled the 6th annual free back-to-school haircuts from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. August 4th. Coiffures and Lavish are both located at the Music City Mall, 4101 East 42nd Street. Call 432-653-1440 or 432-276-5688 or visit facebook.com/ Coiffures Barbershop Salon or facebook.com/ Lavish Barbershop TX. Readathon Fundraiser. Permian Basin Adult Literacy is holding its first ever Readathon Fundraiser. The fundraiser began in July and will run through September 30th. Not only will PBAL be raising essential funds for the Adult Literacy Program, but students will be reading and improving their literacy skills, forming a legacy of reading. PBALC students have committed to reading a minimum of 10 books by September 30th. Sponsors will be assigned a participating student and will have the opportunity to learn about what their student accomplishes over the course of the readathon. Sponsors can choose to provide sponsorship for multiple students. Both individual and corporate sponsorship options are available. To sponsor or for more information, contact Alba Austin at AAUSTIN@PBALC.org or call 432-682-9693. General donations to PBALC are welcome at https://pbalc.org/donate. OA News at OAOA.com. Police investigating scams. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department detailed in a press release that it has received several complaints in reference to a scam involving criminal investigations. Citizens have reportedly received calls from someone pretending to be Lieutenant Sherry Carruth. The calls are transferred to a foreign call center. The callers claim the citizen is under investigation, and in order to get it resolved, they'll need to pay. At no time will OPD ever ask for money in this manner, the press release stated. Should anyone receive a call from this person, simply hang up and do not provide any personal information. To report these scams, please call 432-335-4961. OPD set to host Neighborhood Watch meeting by Royal McGregor, RMCGREGOR at OAOA.com. For the first time in 17 months, the Odessa Police Department will be hosting a Neighborhood Watch meeting. The meeting is scheduled to begin at 7 p.m. today at the Odessa Police Department classroom. Dora McGinnis, a block captain for a neighborhood in Odessa, told members of the media on Monday afternoon that neighborhood watches are important for every neighborhood in the city. "There's not just one section," McGinnis said. "It's all over. The best thing that has worked for us is our Facebook page, that private with only neighbors on it." OPD Corporal Steve LeSueur saw how crime mapping works on the Odessa Police Department app that launched earlier this year that can be downloaded by Apple and Android users. The map shows when, where, and what crime has taken place in the city. As of Monday afternoon, the most recent offense had been uploaded happened at 8:52 p.m. July 25th. LaSuere explained that it takes a couple of days for the crime to be loaded in the city mapping system. "It's an excellent way for us to communicate with the citizens of Odessa," he said about the OPD app. "We are going to be talking about it more at our meeting Tuesday." McGinnis said she urges members of the public to come to the Neighborhood Watch meeting. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Neighborhood Watch Block Captain Dora McGinnis speaks about the collaborative effort among neighbors to reduce crime during a press conference about Neighborhood Watch Monday afternoon at the Odessa Police Department. The Odessan said even though she lives in a well-lit neighborhood and most of her neighbors have security cameras that haven't deterred people from breaking the law. McGinnis said it's important for neighbors to keep in contact when a crime takes place in their respective neighborhoods. "There's comfort knowing your neighbors are there to back you and help you," McGinnis said. "It's not an easy feeling trying to sleep at night when someone is coming in your neighborhood wanting to take things that don't belong to them." OPD Neighborhood Watch, TINYUR.COM/5DWVWNNX. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, July 27th, 2021. Page 2, read. XTO Engineering Camp. Courtesy photos. The University of Texas of the Permian Basin's College of Engineering held the first week, July 19 through 23, of their XTO Engineering Camp for middle school students. Students participated in hands-on experiential learning activities demonstrating principles in chemical engineering, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and petroleum engineering. Visit www.youtube.com/watch?v=x81ASSUHWG.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.